It's time once again to connect with Leith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals and the longtime pastor of Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And he has authored some 15 books, and we are honored to have him with us on a regular basis just to talk about culture and life and faith. Leith, so last time we talked, it was just before election day. The election is over now. Obviously, country still has a lot of divisions, a lot of issues that divide us. So what does the Bible say about winning and losing?
Well, the Bible has a lot of stories about winners and losers. It's interesting. Jesus didn't really ever call us to be winners. He called us to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. So that ought to be our primary approach. We should have a deep belief that God uses all kinds of circumstances for his good. And the great story is Joseph in the Old Testament. I mean, he just lost. He lost at home. He lost with his brothers. He lost in his job. He lost in prison. I mean, the guy was just a loser. And then he comes to the realization that what others intended for evil, God intended for good. And God saved the lives of millions of people. And it was just absolutely marvelous what God accomplished. And so we need to keep that perspective. You know, I've asked hundreds, probably thousands of people, when is the time you were closest to God in your life? And people tell about a loss, about a crisis, about losing jobs and family members. And there may be somebody out there, no one has ever said to me, the closest I ever was to Jesus was the day I won $10 million in the lottery. It's not the day they got their promotion. It's not the day they won some prize. It's the difficult time. So what we should do is say that we're going to trust God, win or lose, and be totally devoted to him.
It's sometimes hard to take that long perspective, though, isn't it? Even as Joseph, I mean, realized it, but there was a lot of time, you know, in the dungeon, if you will, too, and just not being able to see the bright side of that, I guess.
But that's who we are as Christians, that we are faithful to God, and we believe in God and his sovereignty, even in circumstances that we would never choose. And that's what Joseph did so well. I mean, he was faithful to God when it seemed to him, I'm sure, that God maybe had abandoned him, but it wasn't true. And he was faithful to God because he knew God was there, even in the days he may have seemed like he was abandoned.
Leith, you know, I've noticed on news reports and things that a lot of people have lost actual close friendships, years of friendships over this election. There's been a lot of divisiveness and things like that. Now's the time to come back together, though, and maybe some people think that my relationship's irreparable with my old friend. What's your recommendation for them on the first step toward reconciliation?
Take this as an opportunity to live Christianly, to be kind and gracious and loving to people, and don't wait for them to come to you. You go to them. And tell them, you know, as a Christian, it's really important to me that I have a good and a right relationship with you, regardless of political differences that we may have. I seize this as an opportunity to be Jesus Christ in this circumstance.
I saw a bumper sticker some 8 years ago that said, pray for the president, and the Bible reference was Psalm 109, verse 8. And when I got home and looked it up, it kind of made me chuckle because, you know, pray, may his days in office be few. Kind of made me laugh, I guess, but it did make me wonder. But you know, how should we? Is it legitimate to pray for a leader that maybe we don't agree with for an early departure, or you know, talk about praying for our leaders and those in authority? We're commanded to do that.
I'm waiting for you to ask me if I've ever prayed for somebody in authority to die.
I want to know if you've had that bumper sticker on your car. No,
it does make me wonder where the bumper sticker industry actually is centered. I mean, who are the people that come up with these things? Okay, so let's be biblical and theological. That psalm is what is called an imprecatory psalm. Mm. And those are psalms, and there are a number of them, that are actually praying down God's wrath and judgment against enemies. So, yeah, there's a biblical precedent for that. If you read the entire psalm, you also see David confessing his own sins with great humility and referring to God as being sovereign. So if that's into it, I guess that's okay. But I think it ought to be in prayers and probably not on bumper stickers. If we feel that God needs to intervene and replace one leader with another, then talk to God about it. Let God make the final decision. But kind of keep your mouth open to God and closed to others.
You're mentioning Joseph, and I was thinking about Jeremiah 29, how we love that verse about, you know, God has plans for us, you know, for prosper and not to harm us. But there's a section before that. Does that speak to our day today?
I have read that part of Jeremiah more this past year than any other time in my life. And it is a fascinating story of circumstance where the people of Israel were captured, were taken from Jerusalem, which was essentially destroyed, and they're enslaved as a captive people in Babylon. And they want to go back home, and they want to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And their prophets are saying, that's exactly what's going to happen. Just pray, and you'll go back to Jerusalem, and everything will be the way it was before. And that's when Jeremiah comes in as the spokesperson for God and says, it ain't going to happen. And here's what you're supposed to do. Plant gardens, build houses, get married, have children, make Babylon prosper. Bless the place that has captured you. And God has a plan. And the plan is to get you back to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. And it's going to happen in 70 years. And that's longer than the lifespan of these people. So what they're supposed to do is be faithful to God in circumstances that they did not want and did not choose, and honor God in a place that they did not want to be.
You know, with the holidays here upon us now, Thanksgiving coming up very soon, and Christmas, of course, around the corner, the family is going to gather, and there's probably that one relative that always likes to talk faith and politics, the things that you're not supposed to talk about, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Neil, you were telling me about this.
I had a deceased brother-in-law, but those family dinners were pretty uncomfortable because he was very dogmatic about his opinions, and it was, you kind of cringed as you ate your mashed potatoes and wish you could kind of slink away right away after lunch.
So, Leith, what do you recommend for people that have to deal with a relative like this?
You're reminding me of a time when a news reporter left her microphone on and went into the ladies' room and talked to a stranger about her brother-in-law and just beat up on him.
Oh, man.
And it was broadcast over a speech by the President of the United States. And when it was reported in the news outlets, they said exactly this. Isn't that family going to have an interesting Thanksgiving dinner?
Yes.
So, I would say think about it in advance. Think in advance about what you're going to say and how you're going to handle it. And if somebody is really a problem, then talk to them, have a plan on how you're going to deal with them, and think through, how does a Christian handle this situation? What does a Christian say? Maybe have some verses that you've memorized in advance. And it's not to beat up on the other person. It's not to beat them down and to win. It's to say, how does Jesus come into this type of conversation? And honestly, it can be more difficult in a family circumstance on a holiday than at any other time in any other place.
In your book, Faith in the Voting Booth, you do talk about civility. And I guess, you know, we've sort of touched on that that's important all the time. It certainly is. Christians, we have to be winsome and loving. But is civility, how do we understand it? Does that mean, particularly in post-election time, that, you know, we acquiesce to the people that are in power?
It does not mean that. In fact, I think if we are going to be civil, we can state our principles and we can argue for biblical truth, but we can do it in a way that is polite. Richard Mao, in a famous book on civility, has defined civility as public politeness. So my office is in Washington, and I interact with loads of people who have very different views and convictions than mine. And I always try to treat them with respect, hear what they have to say, and I find that they are then open and willing to hear what I have to say. They're curious about it. And I'm an evangelical Christian. Sometimes they have misperceptions about evangelical Christians. And my favorite is at the end of the conversation when they say, I'm really impressed with you as an evangelical in that you treat me with respect, you hear what I have to say, and I want to hear what you have to say. So it's a good thing. It's not only biblical. The Bible clearly teaches us to set aside anger and bitterness and to treat people with kindness and that we speak Christianly. But it's also effective. It's the most effective way of accomplishing what we want to do.
A great conversation once again with Leith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals, longtime pastor at the Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, and author, speaker. I always love having you here, Leith. Thanks so much.